Hello, welcome to the Colcast. I am your host, Chris Collins. It is a very windy 14th of March here on the near the coast of North Wales, not too far away, at my humble abode, HQ. And yeah, like I say, very windy at the moment. We're in the midst of Storm Gareth in the UK at the moment. The very cautiously named Storm Gareth. We like, in the UK, there's a couple of things we do. So whenever there's a storm, we like to name it going from A to Z after random people. So Storm Gareth this time. I don't know who, H is obviously next in the alphabet. I don't know what the next storm will be. Storm Helga or some shit like that. And the other thing we like to do is we like to get very overdramatic about what's going on. So the UK at the moment has been battered by bleeding 40-50 mile an hour winds, which is a bit faster than usual. Truth be told, it did blow me about all over the place on the motorway yesterday, so it probably is causing some people some issues. But for the vast majority of people, we like to be dramatic. We like to make out like things are a lot worse than they are, such as when snow fell recently and the whole country went into an epidemic again, even though it was like half an inch. Or when we had sunny weather a couple of weeks ago. True story, we had sunny weather a couple of weeks ago, yeah. The warmest ever day recorded in February in the UK, I think it was like 22 degrees or something in London. I switch on my local news from where I am, which is Granada. I'm in the northwest of England, slash Wales. And I shit you not, so the news reporter comes across and blah, 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 talking about the warm weather, how everyone's enjoying it. And all of a sudden they go, "And here is the such-and-such family from Wales who've decided to take a trip to the beach for the day, in spite of the warmer-than-normal weather." And it switches over to this bleeding scene, right? It's like 18 degrees on this beach. And this grandparent's, like, wearing a jacket. It's windy as fuck. There's two really, really miserable-looking kids behind who've obviously been told to play in the sea, the freezing as fuck sea, and the sand and whatever else they're doing. And then she is giving an interview to the camera, and she's like, "Well, it's just really nice that we have this weather to go to the beach." And it's, sorry about that Welsh accent, I probably just pissed off most of Wales there. It's 18 degrees. Why am I missing something? Like, 18 degrees is not that warm. And they're stood at the... You're at the fucking... It's 18 degrees and you were at the beach. What are you doing? Go home. Just go... If it's warmer than usual, yeah, it's 18 degrees. Go for a walk or something like that. Don't bring your poor fucking grandchildren to the beach. Jesus Christ. Honestly, they look so miserable behind her. The cameraman had obviously been like, "And if you could play in the sea now and make it look like you're having fun." They were miserable as fuck. If you have to wear a coat at the beach, it's not beach weather. So don't go. Rant over. Yeah, we like to be very dramatic over the weather. So that happened. But yeah, we're in the middle of Storm Gareth at the moment. 40-50 mile an hour winds. What else is going on at the moment? Cheltenham Festival. Big horse racing festival is going on in the UK at the moment. Those two are linked because Monday at Cheltenham, the conditions were awful because of the weather. Bleeding jockeys and horses getting blown around everywhere, and the ground was getting turned up and it was dead soft, and basically it was just a fucking nightmare. If you wanted to bet on any horses, there was no fucking point bothering. You might as well have just pissed your money into the wind, which I pretty much did. It wasn't good every time. Basically, if there was a favourite on a race, yeah, they either fell off, the jockey just fell off, the horse threw him off and just ran off somewhere, or they just were shite. And that pretty much tells the story of that. And apart from that, nothing else really going on with me. Just helping teammates get ready for upcoming kickboxing tournaments in the UK. We've got the WKKC Nationals. We're on the 24th of March. So I'll be heading up to Bradford with a few teammates for that. Shout out to my mate Jordan Baxter. He's fighting soon on the 23rd of March. He's got a massive fight which I cannot go to for family reasons. I'm absolutely gutted I can't make it, but he's fighting for his third British title. I can't remember off the top of my head the opponent. But it's UK Fighting Championships, I think. I think it's their 9th event. He'll be fighting for his, like I say, his third UK title. And it's at the Guildhall in Preston. So if anyone who listens to the show, big fan of MMA, you're around that area, by all means, go down to the Guildhall. Go and watch Jordan fight. He's an animal. I've known him for 8 years now, nearly. Bloody hell. Yeah, 8 years. 2011, I met Jordan. He, long story short, he started the MMA team at the University of Chester, where I used to go, with his mate Tom Crosley. Him and Tom were like creme de la creme as far as I was concerned at the time. They were just like unbelievable fighters. So to see Jordan go from that to 8 years down the line, he's just, you know, absolutely smashing it in the amateur ranks. Should cross over to pro soon. Proper proud of him. Like, just a top guy. Just got everything going good for him in life at the moment. Got married not long ago. Was at the wedding. It was fortunate enough to get an invite to the wedding. And he's just got his head screwed on his shoulders, firmly on his shoulders, Jordan. And he trains hard. He just dedicates his whole life towards it. And if anyone deserves to have success in the sport, it is Jordan. So I'm wishing him all the best of luck. Like I say, if you're around that area of the world, go and see him, go and buy a ticket. I don't think they're expensive. They're probably like 20, 30 quid, and you'll see like a whole afternoon / evening of top fights, top amateur fights, and some of the best UK amateur fighters. So yeah, go and see that if you're free and you're around. Well, good luck to Jordan. Just a quick shout out to him. Wishing him all the best. Hopefully speak to you soon, bud. I know he listens to the podcast, so shout out to you, man. I will put up some details about that fight as well on all the social media and stuff, which I'll talk about at the end of the podcast as well, just in case anyone wants any further details. And that's about it for everything that's going on with me at the moment. So without further ado, let's go into what's going on in the fight world. So the big news story this week was that Conor McGregor was arrested in Miami for... It's a bit unclear what happened, actually. So I'm going to say what I think happened. And what I think happened is, I think he walked out of a hotel. A fan has tried to do what fans think they can do in this day and age and just stick a camera in his face because he's a famous person. And I think Conor, wrongly, I will say, although I don't 100% blame him, but wrongly, he's grabbed the phone out of his hand, he's thrown it on the floor, he's smashed it to bits and he's walked off with it. He's reacted in a way that he shouldn't have reacted. Do I get why people do this to celebrities? Like, on a side note, where they just think... We have this weird relationship with celebrities where we just think that they belong to us because they're in the public eye. So we'll like interrupt them while they're with the families or they're having meals or, you know, when they're out and about just doing everyday shit. Like, if I saw a famous person, if I saw them like eating the dinner or like they were spending time with the kids or something like that, I wouldn't dream of going over and interrupting that or taking pictures. And it's just weird, isn't it? But some people just think they can. They think that these people are the property, which is fair enough. Kind of fair enough why Conor reacted how he did, but not at the same time. Like, you can't just go grabbing people's phones and smashing them on the ground. But this guy, whoever it was anyway, who approached him, he'll have his 5 minutes of fame. He's released a video after the fact, which is weird in itself, which just shows me that he's a bit of an attention whore. And Conor's been bollocked. He's been slapped on the wrist for it, and that's pretty much it. That's all I'm reading into it. That's all I'm getting out of it from what I can read into. That's what I think happened. He just reacted poorly to some idiot coming up to him, sticking a phone in his face. Yeah, it's Conor all over, innit? Conor's always in the news for something or another. Recently, a lot more bad stuff than good stuff. But that's Conor. That's what we've come to expect with the media circus and everything that he brings to the sport. So, the other news about Conor is the fight with him and Cowboy. Donald Cerrone's hit a hitch because the UFC have tried to book them as a co-main event. And Conor's turned around and said, I'm not a co-main. I'm main or I'm not fighting. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm just like jumping on the Conor McGregor train and I love him or anything like that. I'm a big fan of Conor. I love the way he fights. obviously, I love the attention that he's brought to the sport. He's helped push us along. I don't know what the UFC are doing. Conor McGregor is not a co-main event. He is not a co-main event. End of story. I don't care who else is on the card. You can have Jon Jones on the card. You can have Brock Lesnar on the card. DC, Stipe Miocic, Israel Adesanya, Robert Whittaker, Tyron Woodley, Kamaru Usman, GSP. Who else is a big star in the sport? TJ Dillashaw, Henry Cejudo, Max Holloway. Name anyone you want out of any division. If any of those are on the card with Conor McGregor, they are co-main to Conor. It is not the other way around. End of story. He brings so many eyes to the sport. People are tuning in to watch Conor more than they're tuning in to watch any other fighter. It's a fact. Look at the pay-per-view numbers. Look at his TV numbers. Look at the gates. Look at all the figures. He's smashed all the figures. He holds all the records. What are we talking about? Why are we trying to put Conor as a co-main event? It's stupid. And I see people on Twitter. Listen, I can understand, yeah, he's lost fights and he doesn't fight that often and this, that and all the rest of it. That's not the world we live in. That's not the world we live in. We live in a world, yeah, where top of the bill is who brings the most eyes to the sport. That is Conor McGregor. End of story. Case closed. So why the UFC are trying to get him as a co-main? It just sounds like a who's dick is bigger competition. Do you know what I mean? It's just not. I don't get it. And why would you not want, especially with Cowboy? I mean, Cowboy's a big name in his own right. Why would you not have Cowboy and Conor as a main event of a pay-per-view? It's a huge fight. Lost for words. I don't know how else to approach that. But yeah, silly from the UFC. Some fights that have been announced. I'll say this one first because it's got a bit of a backstory around it. Some strange things going on. So Yoel Romero at the end of April is going to be fighting Jacare again now, which I don't mind seeing that fight. The first fight was great. The thing that's a bit controversial about what's happening is Paulo Costa, who he was supposed to be fighting, has been pulled from the event. Yoel Romero was on Ariel Helwani's podcast to say that that was because Paulo Costa had failed a drug test. He'd flagged for something with USADA. Paulo Costa's team have now come out and said that's not the case, but we still don't know why Paulo Costa has been pulled. So it's a bit weird. If you told me, all I'm saying is if you told me that Paulo Costa had failed a drug test, I don't think my face would change. I don't think I'd even react. Because would you really be surprised at all? There's something going on. I've always suspected there's something going on, but you can't. You know, it's unfair to say, you know, maybe Paulo Costa's got unbelievable genetics. Yoel Romero's another one. Everyone sort of kind of looks at him and thinks, maybe, but he's never failed. He's had one little thing in the past and that would prove to be nothing. Maybe these people just have amazing genetics, I don't know. But the facts that we know is Paulo Costa's not fighting anymore. We don't know why he's not fighting. Yoel's fighting Jacare now. It's still a great fight. And hopefully we get to see Paulo Costa soon because he's a destroyer and he's very entertaining. So, yeah, that's that one. Other big fight that's been announced is Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Smith. They will be headlining UFC Stockholm in June. That's a great fight. Perfect fight for both. Both coming off losses to Jon Jones. Makes perfect sense. Who can bounce back and get back into the contender status again. So, brilliant fight. No complaints with that one. UFC 238 starting to shape up nicely. We've got Valentina Shevchenko, the 125-pound champion. She will be defending her belt against Jessica Ai. Elsewhere on the card, I think these are the only other two fights that have been announced. We've got Tatiana Suarez and Nina Ansaroff. Both of those girls are in fine form at the moment, so that will be an unbelievable fight. And then we've got Caitlin Chookagian and Jojo Calderwood as well, which is an unbelievable fight. So it's shaping out to be a strong ladies' main card, that one, UFC 238. If I was UFC, and I think they should have done this a long, long time ago because it's just great. It'd be great for marketing, getting eyes and everything, great for crossing over into the mainstream and stuff. Do an all-woman's card. Do an all-woman's main card. You've got the talent on the rosters now in three divisions. you know, potentially for 145 as well. You've got some unbelievable female fighters in the UFC now. Get a couple more fights on there and do a whole pay-per-view card with just the ladies. Be awesome. Those three fights that have been announced already are brilliant. So why not just put another two on there, top fighters, round it off, and do a very heavily female-featured card. Why not? It's 2019. I think it'll go down very, very well, but that's just me. But let's not speculate anyway. Those three fights that have been announced are unbelievable. They're really, really entertaining. Looking forward to seeing them. Other news stories, just to rattle through these quickly. Michael Bisping and Jorge Masvidal, they've had a little bit of a beef for a while, ever since Bisping and Yoel Romero had their little running with each other after after Yoel beat Chris Weidman? And obviously they had the little thing where Bisping was in the commentator's booth, tore up the Cuba flag, which Jorge Masvidal was not impressed with, and I think that's where it's all originated from. But Jorge Masvidal was on, you know, obviously he's fighting this weekend against Darren Till. He was on broadcast and stuff on BT Sport recently saying that him and Michael Bisping had gone too far and they were going to settle it either inside or outside of the cage. Michael Bisping's come out again this week and just said, like, you know, if I see him this week, we're in the same hotel, we're around the same people. If I see him this week, I'm just going to walk over to him and just try and settle it because I don't even know what it's about anymore. I kind of agree with Bisping. Like, if he's tore up the Cuba flag, it's the fight game. We're doing things to make a name and to try and add a bit of intrigue to a potential fight. I don't think Michael Bisping has this serious thing against Cuba. I think we're kind of clutching at straws, and I think Jorge's just took it very, very personally. And I think all that needs is maybe an apology from Michael to Jorge, and then that's it. So it just seems a bit silly, but yeah, tensions are still very high between those two, obviously. Paulie Malignaggi has signed a deal with Bare Knuckle Boxing, fighting championship, or some fucking shit. There's that many of them out there now. He's signed a deal to fight bare knuckle fighting anyway. There's speculation that his first fight is going to be against Artem Lobov. Obviously interesting because of the Conor McGregor story back in the day when Conor was getting ready for Floyd Mayweather and had Paulie come into his camp and all that drama. The big takeaway from this, though, is that Paulie's called out Conor again. And the only thing I've got to say on this is, please let it go. It was years ago, Paulie. It was so long ago. You need to let it go. Like, whether he dropped you in sparring, whether Conor dropped you in sparring, or whether he didn't drop you, or whatever's going on, it was hot then. It's not hot now. And it just looks a bit sad, the fact that you keep going on and on about it. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way against Paulie at all. I am such a big fan of Paulie Malignaggi. He's one of my favourite, if not my favourite, boxing pundit. He just, the thing that I love about Paulie is he just calls it how he sees it, says it how it is, says what he's thinking, has such an analytical mind, it's unbelievable, sees things that others just don't. And obviously that's because he's a former champion himself, but this beef with Conor's just never made him look good. And when they're both going at each other, it's still, I mean, I think about Conor as well, I'm just like, oh, let it go. It happened so long ago. The time to make any fight between Conor and Paulie was 2 years ago. And it was never made, so let's just let it go. But yeah, he signed a bare-knuckle boxing fight. He probably will get the fight against Artem because there's the storyline's there. Artem, if I can give any advice to you, mate, Paulie Malignaggi, former world champion, you don't want any part of any straight-up bare-knuckle boxing or any other fight with Paulie, where it's just hands. That's it, case closed. Other story, only one that I'm going to talk about on this episode this week. Rumble Johnson potentially could come out of retirement to face John Jones. Feels like John Jones is the one fight that he'd want to come out of retirement for. It's the one fight that should have happened back in the day. God, I would watch that fight. It'd be so good. Rumble Johnson, athlete, absolute beast. Just the most ridiculous knockout power you've ever... Maybe minus Francis Ngannou, the most ridiculous knockout power you've ever seen from anyone in the sport of MMA. Just knocks people dead with either hand. I'd watch that fight. It'd be a dangerous fight for John, I think, especially at heavyweight. Anthony wouldn't need to cut the weight because one shot would change the whole course of that fight. But John, as we know, is so talented. Easily could be called the greatest of all time. He's certainly up there. It just be a really intriguing clash of styles, be a very, very interesting fight. It's one that everyone's wanted to see for a long time. So hopefully Rumble does seriously consider coming out of retirement for that one, because that would be fire. That would be absolutely unbelievable if that fight happened. Sign me up for that. So last weekend we obviously had a bumper weekend of fights. excuse me. Couple of events I didn't cover just because I was a bit short on time in the last podcast. Obviously, I had a big one of the bigger boxing matches so far in 2019 last weekend. Sean Porter against Yordanis Ugas. I think a lot of people expected Sean Porter to do what Sean Porter does and just steamroll forward and just brawl and destroy. It didn't quite go like that. It was a very, very close fight. Sean Porter defended his title, his WBC welterweight title, by split decision. But it was a bit of... It was sort of like half a dozen of one and six of the other. Sean Porter just wasn't very... He wasn't his usual aggressive self. And Ugas just didn't have enough output. It was kind of one of them. The fight I thought was there for the taking by Ugas. If he would have just shown a bit more initiative and impetus, he probably could have won the fight and quite handily. And the same again for Sean Porter. Sean Porter would have just come out of his shell a bit more. I don't know what was troubling Porter, what he was kind of worried about, whether it was the reach, sort of the height of Ugas. I don't know, was causing him problems. He spent a lot of the fight on the outside, sort of. Coming in every now and again, sort of landing the biggest strikes and then getting back out of trouble again. But yeah, a bit of a weird one. Not the typical Sean Porter performance, but he got it done. He defended his title. It probably was a fair decision in the end, and we'll see what's next for him and for Ugas going forward. Obviously, you had a Cage Warriors card last weekend as well. Cage Warriors 1-3, that came from Copenhagen in Denmark. Very, very good card, very entertaining card. Not too many notable names on there. Very good night for the Danish fighters. The main event was Alex Lahore and Nicholas Dolby. For you UK fans, you may recognise Nicholas Dolby. He was a former Cage Warriors champion before he went over to the UFC. Fought one of our better fighters to a draw in the UFC. Little known guy called Darren Till. Maybe you've heard of him. We'll mention him a little bit more later in the podcast. But yeah, Nicholas Dolby, super, super talented fighter. I rate Nicholas Dolby very highly. I think he's a lot better than people give him credit for, just because he's come out of the UFC and gone back to Cage Warriors. I don't think you need to read too much into that. And he looked sensational against Alex Lahore. Got him up against the cage, big left hook, and knocked him the fuck out. And I'm pretty sure that's going to punch his ticket back to the big time. I'll be very shocked if you don't see him. If I could predict, I would say that he makes an appearance at the Stockholm card at the in the beginning of the year, the one that's being headlined by Anthony Smith and Alexander Gustafsson. I think you'll see Nicholas Dolby back in the UFC on that card. Maybe as a prelim headliner or something like that. You know, he's a big name in that part of the world. Nicholas Dolby's quietly been picking up a name for himself in Europe for the last few years, and this was another big, big performance for him. He just looked sensational from start to finish. Congratulations to him. Elsewhere, you had one championship, so one championship reign of valor. He spoke about, excuse me, spoke about the top three fights on the card when I went over the podcast last week. Other than that, it was chock-a-block with finishes all the way through the card. I think there was one submission somewhere, but a lot of knockouts. The rest obviously are going to decisions. Top five fights on the card actually were all finishes, all KOs. The three fights that I spoke about, Alain and Galani and Mauro Ciarrilli. Mauro Ciarrilli got it done, KO with knees about 2 minutes into the first round. Not really much to say about that. He just got in there and got it done, Mauro Ciarrilli. And it'll be interesting to see what 1FC do with him going forward. I don't think he's going to be getting a title shot anytime soon, just because of the way that he lost to Brandon Vera in his last fight out. But Mauro Ciulli back in the win column. Super talented heavyweight, and I'm expecting him to start his slow ascent back to the title now. Fotor and Joan Mulia Legoau. Fotor got it done at right at the end of the first round with a TKO to punches. Super impressive performance. Just looks slick as anything. And the sky's the limit for Fotor. I'm really looking forward to seeing him next time out. Main event, Sebastian Kadastan got it done against Georgie Kitchigan. Sorry, my pronunciation is horrible sometimes. Kitchigan retired at the end of the second round. Kadastan, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. It was not a domination, but a very, very impressive performance. He really started to pour it on in the second round. And like I say, Kitchigan retiring. I mean, it's probably the worst way to go out, isn't it? When you verbally say that you just cannot go on anymore. And that was that. Kadastan defends his very recently acquired one welterweight championship. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in his next fight. He just seems to be going from strength to strength, Kadastan. So congratulations to him. The big event over the weekend was obviously UFC Wichita. So, lower down on the card, Jana Kunitskaya picked up a workman-like decision win against Marion Renault. I thought that was going to be a difficult fight for her, to be honest. Marion Renault, you know, she's no walk in the park for anyone. Anthony Rocco Martin, he beat Sergio Moraes. A very, very good win for Martin. Sergio Moraes, again, not an easy fight for anyone. Move to the main card. Just go straight to the main card. So on the main card, Tim Boetsch effectively has had his P45 confirmed now with what was, I'm not going to mention who words, it was a horrible showing against Akhmadov. Amari Akhmadov just dominated him from start to finish, destroyed his nose. Tim Boetsch just didn't look inspired at all. I don't know if he's just had too many miles on the clock or what it is with Tim Boetsch, but his heart just doesn't seem to be out anymore, and I think he needs to retire at this point now. Beneil Dariush picked up a very good win. Drew Dober came out very aggressively, but Dariush managed to ride the quiet storm, picked up a submission in the second round, so he'll get a better fight out, a higher-ranked opponent next time out. Blagoy Ivanov and Ben Rothwell, super close fight. If I could have given it to anyone, I probably would have given it to Rothwell. But I'm not extremely upset with Ivanov picking up the decision. He did land the harder blows in the fight, I think that's what's got him the decision. But it's nice to have Ben Rothwell back. You know, I think the struggling for names at the top of heavyweight at the moment, and it's nice to have a good, solid top 5/top 10 heavyweight back in the mix after his little dabble with Mexican supplements. Nico Price and Tim Means, what a fight. What a fight. And that knockout was nasty. It was nasty because not only did he knock Tim Means the fuck out, and I don't think Tim Means has ever been stopped by a knockout before, clean like that anyway. Not only did he knock Tim Means clean out, but Tim Means' ankle, the way he fell, he broke his ankle as well. Oh, he was. If you've not seen it, go on Twitter or YouTube or whatever and look it up. It's not nice. It reminded me a lot, actually, of, I think, was it Gonzaga? It was either Gonzaga or Brendan Schaub when they knocked out Mirko Krokop. It was one of them. But on one of them, obviously, Krokop got folded in both of those fights. But on one of them, he like fell on top of his leg. It was a little bit like that, but the worst actually happened this time. I think Krokop got away with any injury there, but this time Tim Means broke his ankle. It was just a complete freak accident the way it happened. There's nothing you can do, but yeah, he'll be out for a long time, Tim Means, hoping he recovers quickly. Eliseo Zaleski Dos Santos, a.k.a. Small Dos Santos, a.k.a. Little Dos Santos, a.k.a. Easy Dos Santos. See what I do there, easy. Easy Dos Santos picked up a hugely impressive win against Curtis Millender. This was a bit of a battle of prospects. Whoever won this one obviously gets the bigger name fights going forward. Whoever loses has to go back to the drawing board and build themselves back up again. This time out, it's Easy Dos Santos. Picked up a very quick and slick submission win in the first round. So he will now probably be cracking the top 15, so we expect him to get a ranked opponent at welterweight on his next out. Main event, so JDS and Derek Lewis. Obviously, everyone's heart said Derek Lewis, everyone's head said Junior Dos Santos, and it went the way of Junior Dos Santos. Derek Lewis kind of looked threatening at times, but just looked like he didn't really have any ideas in there. He was obviously dependent on the big punch. His fitness and cardio just didn't look great. He was badly hurt by a body kick in the first round. Tried to capitalize a couple of times when JDS tried to come in and finish the fight. But it just wasn't a great performance by Derek Lewis. He wasn't thoroughly outclassed, but it was clear to see who the more skilled fighter was in there. And JDS picked up, got him out. He got out of the first round, Derek Lewis, credit to him, but second round, JDS poured on the pressure and got the finish at 1 minute and 58 seconds. JDS, I mean, I don't know why. I think he was ranked at like number 10 before this fight or something. That's silly. He's one of the best heavyweights in the world. He's definitely top 5 heavyweights of all time. Has to be when you look at his resume. And JDS, he's one fight away again from another title shot. I'd watch him and DC. But why not? I think that'd be a great fight. I don't think it's just be a case of it's a simple cakewalk for DC. Obviously, DC would be the massive favourite, but what a great fight that'd be. And JDS is one fight away now from punching his ticket to another title shot. So props to him. He's looked unbelievable recently. He's recent little resurgence. He's looked really, really good, JDS. Beat Ivanov, who was also on this card, in his last fight out as well. That was a dominant decision. And yeah, he's just really starting to impress me, JDS. He's starting to get back to form again. Derek Lewis, I don't know what you do with him. Apparently he came to this fight with a knee injury. It came out after the fight. I don't know how true that is, but I'm expecting you'll see him rest up for the next 6 to 9 months. And maybe you'll see him again at the end of the year on a November-December card against who, I don't know. Probably be someone lingering between 10 and 15, I'd imagine. They'll try and just build Derek Lewis back up again to contender status. This weekend, so we've got a few things happening this weekend. When I say a few things happening, I'm just going to focus on where my attention deserves to be focused on, which is, we'll start with the boxing first. So, big boxing, arguably the biggest boxing match of 2019 so far. If you are in the UK, I believe they are showing this on ITV4 this weekend, which is amazing for us. I'm not 100% sure on that. I swear I read something before, I heard a rumour or something. But it is obviously Errol Spence Jr. and Mikey Garcia this weekend. That is going to be a spectacular fight. I'm really, really looking forward to it. So, Errol Spence Jr., for a lot of the UK fans, you probably would have got your introduction to Errol Spence Jr. when he fought our very own Kell Brook, Sheffield's Kell Brook. When was that fight now against Kell Brook? I want to say it was a couple of years ago. Can't remember. Sorry, just went off on a tangent there. I want to say it was a couple of years ago, but he won the IBF welterweight title against Kell Brook in a fight that Kell Brook was probably winning at the time. But if you watch Kell Brook and Gennady Golovkin, obviously you know the history of Kell Brook and his orbital bone. His eye was causing him serious problems. Credit to Errol Spence. He capitalised on that and got the knockout in the 11th round. And then from there, he's looked unbelievable, to be honest. You know, he looked great against Lamont Peterson, I thought. Carlos Ocampo was a great win for him. And now he's got the Mikey Garcia fight. Before that, you know, he had a solid resume as well. Had the likes of Samuel Vargas on there. Chris Algieri picked up a TKO. Chris Algieri picked up a KO. Chris Van Heerden. Phil LaGreco was a good win for him. You know, some solid names on his resume, no doubt about it. He's not got that marquee name on his record yet. I don't know if I'd call Mikey Garcia a marquee name. I'd say Mikey Garcia is a bit more of a dangerous fight, to be honest. And the reason why is, and this is why I think the odds are a bit crazy, even though they're starting to put, everyone's starting to pull the money on Mikey Garcia a bit now. Yes, Errol Spence is the bigger boxer. Yes, Errol Spence has got the power advantage, clearly. He's clear power advantage, there's no doubt about it. But in terms of pure boxing ability, Mikey Garcia is unbelievable. Like, unbelievable. If you were going to get a kid who was interested, 4, 5, 6 years old, and they said, I want to learn how to box, you could do no more wrong than giving them a DVD with Mikey Garcia's greatest hits and saying, there you go, be like him. He's perfect. Everything he does is just so technically sound. He does everything the way that you read in boxing manuals that you should be doing. Do you know what I mean? He's just so slick. He's so smooth in everything that he does. And he's beaten good name after good name. I mean, his recent record really is, you started to see the names pile up. The Adrian Broner fight was probably the one that introduced him to a lot of the mainstream fans. And that was a dismantling. It was a complete dismantling. For everyone who's sort of diehard boxing fan, a little bit more into it than others, than the casuals, you know with Adrian Broner what you're going to get. He doesn't turn up to the big fights, and the Mikey Garcia fight for him was a big fight. To everyone else, though, all they saw was Adrian Broner, well-known name, well-associated with Floyd Mayweather, and famous because of that, and all his antics outside the ring, and he got taken to task by Mikey Garcia. And that's what Mikey Garcia does. He doesn't finish an awful lot of his fights, especially recently. Obviously, yeah, he had a fantastic run at the start of his career. But recently, as he started to step up in competition again, he's started to show people just how good a boxer he is and how well he can mix it up and how skillful he is and how precise he is with his strikes. And there's just so many good things I could say about Mikey Garcia. There's no wasted energy with him. There's no craziness. There's no swaying from the game plan. There's none of that. Every time you see Mikey Garcia, you just see someone who's cool, he's calm, he's collected, he's got the skills to pay the bills. He goes in there, he sticks to the game plan, he knows exactly what he's doing. And if he needs to cruise to a 12-round decision against you, and he knows he needs to stick to a game plan to get you out of there and get the win, then that's exactly what he's going to do. And I'm going to sound the upset alarms here. I'm going to say that Mikey Garcia knows exactly what he needs to do this weekend. He just needs to avoid the power of Errol Spence. He needs not to try and get into uncomfortable positions, close up dirty boxing with Errol Spence where he could get hurt. He's going to use as much of his, what I would say, superior footwork as possible. He's going to get in when he needs to. He's going to get out when he needs to. He's not going to be there to be hit by Spence. And I'm going to say that he picks up a 12-round unanimous decision win. I know, shocking. I'm going to be putting money on it. I genuinely just do think, as good as Errol Spence Jr. is, and as talented he is, and as much of a fan of him as I am, I think Mikey Garcia is just out of this world. He's so underrated, it's unbelievable. And I think he's going to pick up what everyone will soon realise will be a very comfortable unanimous decision victory. So, say whatever you want about me. Say I don't know what I'm talking about. We'll see if I know what I'm talking about come the end of this weekend. And for all you UK fans who are wondering what you're doing with your Saturday night, have you got that lingering feeling in the back of your head? Like, I'm pretty sure there's something on Saturday night, roughly about 5, 6 o'clock. Is there something on? Yeah, there is something on. There's a UK UFC card. A decent hour for once. Unbelievable. We don't have to wait up until 3 a.m, ladies and gentlemen. We don't have to go to bed at 7 a.m, absolutely drained out of our minds, eyeballs burning. We finally get a card, a decent hour for once. And for once as well, we've been given a banger of a UK card. There's so many good fights on this. We will start with the prelims first. We'll just stroll on through these. So, fighting a featherweight starting off the whole card, Mike Grundy, Nad Narimani. You may remember Nad Narimani, former Cage Warrior standout, won the belt against Paddy Pimblett, crossed over to the UFC, had a good showing last time out. I think you'll see him pick up a win again here. I'm going to say he picks up a submission win.
Molly McCann and Priscilla Cachoeira. They are fighting in the next fight up, women flyweight. Molly McCann had a bit of a rough go in her UFC debut, but I'm backing her to pick up a unanimous decision win here. Featherweight, Danny Hendry, Dan Ige. I will pluck for Danny Hendry there by decision. Middleweight, Ian Heinisch and Tom Breeze. I think Tom Breeze gets him out of there in one by knockout. Tom Breeze, so underrated. It's unbelievable. If you've not heard of Tom Breeze before, go and look him up. He is a stud. Light heavyweight, Nikolai Negumarev. I've not heard of him before. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his second name. He's fighting Saparbek Safarov, who I have seen fight once before. And based off that, I'm going to say that Safarov picks up a unanimous decision victory. Do not, don't take my word for that one. I don't really know much about those two guys, to be honest with you, but I'm hoping it's a great fight. Matt Diocese and Joseph Duffy, Joe Duffy, Irish Joe Duffy, fighting at lightweight in the next fight up. I think that's Joe Duffy's fight to lose, to be honest. He's been in there with much more skilled guys. He's obviously the more experienced guy. Matt Diocese, I'm a big fan of Matt Diocese. I just don't think he's quite on the skill level of Joe Duffy yet. So I'm going to say Joe Duffy picks up a second round submission in that one. And headline in the prelims, Arnold Allen and Jordan Rinaldi. Arnold Allen is quietly just been picking up win after win after win in the UFC. A couple of come from behind wins as well, which were, you know, absolutely outstanding. His last fight, who did he fight in his last fight, Arnold Allen? Hang on, I'm going to pull up the record here. It's going to do my head in because his last fight was, he was getting beaten and beaten badly, and he picked up an absolutely amazing submission, front choke submission against the cage, and I can't remember who it was that he fought. Mads Burnell, that was it. So he was losing that fight in Liverpool last year. That was Darren Till's headline in that fight as well against Wonderboy Thompson. Losing it really, really badly, and then third round, managed to reverse position, get Mads up against the fence, got him in a front choke, and got the submission. Unbelievable comeback by Arnold Allen. You know, he's just so tough and so durable, and he's just picking up quality win after quality win, quietly been on the rise, and I think he picks up another good win here against Jordan Rinaldi. Middleweight, starting the main card, Jack Marshman and John Phillips. Jack Marshman, this is a good bounce back fight for him. He's had a bit of a tough go of it recently. You know, he's beaten good guys in the UFC. Magnus Chaedenblad was a good win for him. Ryan James was a good win for him. But you come up against Thiago Santos, you know, he's about to fight John Jones for the title. And you know the quality he was beaten there. Antonio Carlos Jr., he's fantastic on the ground. You go to the ground with Carlos Jr., it's not going to end well for you. So that was a bit of a short night for him. And the Carl Robertson fight last time out, UFC 230, was a lopsided decision loss against a very, very well-versed striker. It's just a perfect bounce-back fight, this, for Jack Marshman. I think he's going to beat John Phillips, and I think he's going to get him out of there very early. I'm going to say a knockout in round one. Danny Roberts and Claudio Silva. So Danny Roberts, the old welterweight standout, British welterweight standout. We've seen him quite a few times in the UFC now, and he's picked up a... I don't think he's had a bad go of it in the UFC at all. Obviously, he's had a couple of tough losses against Mike Perry and Nordin Salib. Quite bad knockouts, but he beat Dominic Steele. That was a good decision for him. Bobby Nash was a nasty knockout. And the Nelson and Ponzinibbio card, that was a couple of years ago, I think. Oliver Enkamp was a fantastic knockout last year. And then he beat David Zawada by split decision. So, you know, he's quietly working himself back up the welterweight division again, and comes up against Claudio Silva. You know, it's a winnable fight for Danny Roberts, no doubt about it. Claudio Silva's on an amazing run himself. Obviously, he's the names on his record that we'll recognise as UK fans. He beat Brad Scott. That was a unanimous decision win. Leon Edwards, he beat in 2014. That was quite a few years ago, but that was a split decision, the fight that I fought Leon Edwards won at the time. and had a big massive break and came back and beat Nordin Taleb later last year, I think it was, by rear naked choke. This will just depend, I think, because Danny Roberts has been more active recently. I'm going to lean towards Danny Roberts. I'm never going to go into hometown guys anyway, so I wouldn't take anything I'm saying too seriously. Take it all with a pinch of salt. I'm very biased. But I'm going to lean towards Danny Roberts just because of the fact that he's been a lot more active recently. If you beat Nordin Taleb, it's a good win. It's a really, really good win. Nordin Taleb is very underrated, I think. I don't think enough people know just how good he is. But Claudio Silva's very, very accomplished on the ground. I think Nordin Taleb made mistakes in that fight, silly mistakes, and got caught. And it just depends. If we're getting the same Claudio Silva who was on the rise a few years ago when he was picking up win after win after win, it's going to be a big problem for Danny Roberts. Otherwise, I think Danny Roberts is going to clock him with a big shot and he's going to get him out of there, I will say, the second round. Third fight on the main card at bantamweight, we've got Jose Alberto Quinones against Nathaniel Wood. I'm not going to go into this too much. Nathaniel Wood is an absolute diamond in the rough. He's an unbelievable prospect. I'm going to say that he knocks Jose Alberto Quinones out in one. Round one knockout, and that's all I'm going to say on that one. And now we get to the business end of the card. So, light heavyweight fight. Sleeper of a fight on this card. Not enough people are talking about it. Volkan Ozdemir and Dominic Reyes. So, Volkan Ozdemir, obviously former title challenger, has had a bit of a rough go of it recently, losing to Daniel Cormier at UFC 220 for the belt. And then he was submitted by Anthony Smith in their fight night headliner at the end of last year, in a fight that he was winning big in the beginning. But Anthony Smith managed to turn the tide, ride the storm out and turn the tide in the third round. So this is Volkan Ozdemir looking to bounce back here and not lose three on the bounce, which wouldn't be great even for the very shallow light heavyweight division. However, he's coming up against an absolute killer in Dominic Reyes, who is just on the rise at the moment. So his last few fights, he's just looked unstoppable since he's come into the UFC. So Joachim Christensen knocked him out in quick fashion, 30 seconds into the first round of their fight. Jeremy Kimball got him out of there, rear naked choke in the first round. Knocked Jared Cannonier the fuck out in the middle of last year on the Meyer and Usman card. And then Ovin St. Preux, he absolutely destroyed at UFC 229. He just took him apart. Just, he was a complete and utter domination. He just dismantled him bit by bit. He just looked so impressive in that fight. And Ovin St. Preux is good. He's a good light heavyweight, Ovin St. Preux. He's been in there with some of the best. He's beaten some of the best. Took John Jones to a decision just like Anthony Smith did last weekend. A couple of weekends ago, rather. You know, Ovin St. Preux is good, and Dominic Reyes took him to task. And I think Dominic Reyes is going to continue his rise here. I think he's a much better striker than Ozdemir. I think Ozdemir probably has the power advantage. But as long as Reyes doesn't get silly and doesn't try and rush him for the finish, or he just needs to stay patient. He needs to stay patient. He needs to land his shots when he sees them. He needs to capitalise on the opportunities that he sees, and he will get them. It's not like Volkan Ozdemir is unhittable, because he is very, very hittable at times. And I'm going to say that he knocks out Ozdemir in the second round. Co-main event, Leon Edwards. So Leon Edwards has been on a brilliant run over the last few years. He lost to Kamaru Usman in 2015. Since then, he's picked up six on the bounce. And he's beaten some good names. Albert Tumanov, great name. Vicente Luque, you saw him recently against Brian Barberena. That was a great win for him. Beat Brian Barberena after that. Peter Sabota was a brilliant performance. It really, really was. And Donald Cerrone was the marquee name that he needed on his record to really bump him over with the mainstream fans and get him introduced to everyone. And it's a big step up in competition, this, for Leon. Gunnar Nelson already has been in there with some of the best in the welterweight division. His striking is very, very underrated. Obviously, his jiu-jitsu is out of this world. It's outstanding. He's had a couple of tough losses in the UFC since he's been in the UFC. So the Rick Story fight, we learned an awful lot about his limitations at the time. When he came back against Brandon Fats, he looked miles better. Obviously, the Damian Maia fight was a fantasy matchup at the time, and he was silly not to try and work his stand-up a lot more in that fight because, come on, really, we're going to try and take on Damian Maia in a straight jiu-jitsu match. It's not going to work out well. And he's only ever lost in the UFC, you know, Santiago Ponzinibbio, it was a rough one. It will always be marred by the eye pokes. Even though Ponzinibbio looked fantastic, he picked up a quick knockout, it's always going to be marred. There's always going to be a question mark over that result. Apart from that, you know, Gunnar Nelson is took out quality names. Alex Oliveira was unreal performance. He just unleashed fury on Alex Oliveira. You know, choked the shit out of him in the second round, really badly hurt him before that. Alan Joban, he lit him up like a Christmas tree and submitted him in the second round of their fight. Destroyed Albert Tumanov. You know, Brandon Fats, like I said before, that was a great win at UFC 189. He's got some really, really good wins on his record, Gunnar Nelson, and I'm going to sound the upset alarms again here. I'm going to say that he cracks Leon in the first round. He hurts him, gets him down to the ground, and he chokes him out. I'm going to say it's a quick, quick finish. Upsets Leon, sends Leon back to the drawing board. And there you see Gunnar Nelson start to get the bigger fights in the division again. That's my gut feeling, what my gut feelings tell me. So that is what I'm going to go for on that fight. And that leads us on to the main event. So Jorge Masvidal. So if you... I thought he beat Alia Quinta in 2015. I thought he also beat Benson Henderson a few fights after that. I thought he beat Lorenz Larkin in their fight. And I also thought he did enough to beat Damian Maia in their fight at UFC 211. So if you reverse all of those results, which were all split decisions that went the other way, you would have seen that Masvidal would have been on a 6, 9, 10... He would have been on an 11-fight win streak. He definitely lost the fight to Wonderboy Thompson at UFC 217. I absolutely agree with that decision. I just think he struggled with, like everyone does, with Wonderboy's stand-up. Wonderboy's so good on the feet. He's just an enigma. He's a puzzle that very, very few people have managed to solve. And he did struggle in that fight. He lost that fight, no doubt about it. But some of the wins that Jorge Masvidal's picked up in the UFC, destroyed Jake Ellenberger, ran through Donald Cerrone like he wasn't even there. You know, Cesar Ferreira, that was a fantastic win. He's just got so many fights against so many names that... I mean, there's so many names on his record that he's faced. He's just a true veteran of the sport. He's faced everyone. You know, Ryan Healy, Paul Daly, KJ Nunes. He's fought Tim Means, Gilbert Melendez, Michael Chiesa. He's fought Pat Healy. Obviously, the names I mentioned before, Aya Quinta, Ben Henderson, Lorenz Larkin, Ross Pearson. It's just a who's who on his record of people that he's faced. He's been in there with some of the best. And Darren Till is really going to have to be at the top of his game here to pick up a win against Jorge Masvidal. But I do think Darren Till should be the favourite. And the reasons why is because the fights that we've seen Jorge Masvidal lose are typically to guys who are better strikers. The Wonderboy Thompson fights are a great example. Darren Till is an elite striker. I really do genuinely believe he's an elite striker. He's bigger, he's rangier, he's faster, I think. He obviously has more power. It's not to say Jorge Masvidal's not good on the feet. Jorge Masvidal's one of them. He's a jack of all trades. He's not a master of anything, but he's good at everything. He's just good across the board. There's nothing that he's not good at. You saw that in, again, going back to the Wonderboy fight. He wasn't blown out of the water by Wonderboy. He did lose his decision, but he more than held his own. Damian Maia, unbelievable jiu-jitsu player, unbelievable. But Jorge Masvidal did a really good job of defending positions on the ground. There's a couple of exchanges that I thought he actually came out on top of. I really do think he won that fight. I think he was hard done by to lose that by split decision. He's a master. He's not a master of anything, but he's a jack of all trades. But he does tend to struggle against people who are elite in the striking realm. And I do think Darren Till, like I said, is elite in the striking realm. And you look at Darren Till's record, I know there wasn't really anyone on there, but Donald Cerrone, he proved himself to the mainstream. He proved himself to everyone at 170 that, you know, I've just blown Cowboy out of the water in 4 minutes here. Yeah, that's how good I am. And then when he come up against Wonderboy and he managed to solve the Wonderboy puzzle, the thing that impressed me the most with the Wonderboy fight was he didn't just go in there and just try and get Wonderboy out of there straight away. He showed patience. He stuck to a game plan. Good movement in that fight. Good head movement. Good foot movement. Was the aggressor throughout. Constantly kept Wonderboy on the back foot. Constantly kept him guessing. And in the fifth round, he landed the big shot that could have ended it all. By far the biggest shot in that fight and won that fight. And Wonderboy Thompson, the only people that have beaten Wonderboy Thompson are the creme de la creme at 170. So an elite guy, Darren Till, really, really was unlucky in his last fight against Tyron Woodley. What can you say? Tyron Woodley is one of the best to ever do it at 170, one of the greatest welterweight champions of all time. But I think Darren Till bounces back here. I don't think he's going to knock Jorge Masvidal out. I think Jorge Masvidal is just too tough and too savvy and too crafty for that. But I think it's going to be a competitive fight, and I think you see Darren Till pick up a decision win. I will say a 49-46. Or possibly a 48-47, depending on how competitive Jorge can be in the striking phases, or if he manages to land a takedown or two. And that is that for this week's episode of the Coldcast. I don't think I've got anything else to address. They're pretty much the two events that everyone's going to be interested in this weekend. So obviously Errol Spence Jr. and Mikey Garcia. I'm pretty sure for all you UK fans listening, that is on ITV4. Don't take my word for it, but I'm pretty sure I saw something about that. So have a look at times and stuff for that. You don't want to miss that, because if you get it on free TV, that is a belting fight to watch. And then obviously we get BT Sport. Saturday night, decent hour. I think the main card starts, or the prelims start like 5:30 or something. Happy days. We actually get to watch a UFC card at a normal time on Saturday for once. The rest of the world, suck it. You can wake up at early hours of the morning and watch it for a change. Only joking. Love you all. Appreciate you all for listening to the podcast. Thank you so much for your support. Follow us on social media. We are the Coldcast, THECOLLCAST. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. Listen, subscribe to the podcast. We're on everything. Don't need to go through a lot of channels. Whatever you're listening to your podcast on, search for the Coldcast, you will find it. Please subscribe. You'll know when new episodes are available. Tell all your friends about the podcast. Please spread the word. That's how this is going to get bigger. And I really appreciate all the feedback and everything that I'm getting off everyone. It's superb. It makes me feel good about myself. I love compliments. Who doesn't? But I also love it when you give me constructive criticism as well. It allows me to get better and put out a better product for you all. So I just appreciate your comments, good or bad. Even if they're shitty, fire them my way. I don't get offended easily. Make my day. And that's it. For me, I'm going to go. It's midnight now. Just touched midnight. I'm going to go crawl into bed, because I still have a 9-to-5 job. My podcast isn't that big yet, and I have to wake up at 7:30 tomorrow. So that's a wrap for me for the night. And hopefully it'll be a fantastic weekend of fights this weekend. I can't see how it won't be. Some amazing fights, especially on the UK card. For once, we actually get a good card top to bottom, so appreciate UK fans. It doesn't come very often. Usually we get one or two fights on the card. Not every single fight is a banger, so pray to the MMA gods to really treat us this time, and to Uncle Dana and the rest of those boys down at the UFC offices. That's a wrap. I'm out of here. I'm fed up of waffling on. You probably are telling me to shut up now, down your phones and screaming for me to show up. So I'm going to do you all a favour, and I'm going to sign out. Speak to you soon.